Hello everyone, Colin here. I am recording in a bathroom, which is why I may sound a little strange. So this week, John and I decided to unlock some of our exclusive Patreon content. And what you will hear in just a moment is an episode we recorded for our patrons about the new Mission Impossible movie, Dead Reckoning Part 1. And just as a reminder for anyone who really likes this episode, if you are not supporting us through Patreon, you can do that by checking the Patreon link in the show notes. When you do so, you will have access to a fair amount of exclusive Patreon content where John and I discuss a variety of different topics. Next week, we will return with new episodes about the television program Community. So if you are here for that, you can skip this episode and look for that new episode next week. Okay, thank you and have an awesome day. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Hot Ones Podcast. If you are listening to this, you are one of our dedicated Patreon supporters, and we hope you accept the mission of listening to this episode. My name is Colin Cox.
I was going to say that. My name is John Phelps. Colin, let's talk about a gift to Earth,
a gift to the world. Yeah.
Thomas Cruise, middle name, I don't know, Jessica. Probably.
David?
I don't know. That sounds terrible. Anyway, Tom Cruise.
No, it does.
He's back again as Ethan Hunt, number 7, which is wild. Most of the time, these movies have started to sort of, I think, hit their peak around like 3 or 4. We're Fast and Furious 10 now, which has gone completely sort of off the rails. Vin Diesel's
sure.
Jumping cars out of a fucking spaceship and shit. So you would expect these movies to be losing steam, but I think they're just getting better every single one that comes out. Colin and I had the great opportunity to watch this a week ago, the opening day, and what a flick. What a flick this is. I just loved it. I can't stop thinking about it. I'll probably go again to watch it. It's stellar from beginning to end. Tom Cruise loves movies, and he wants you to love movies. And as far as his personality, he's not probably the best. I think he has a few screws loose, but he also hands down is responsible for like the film industry continuing to do what it does. So, yeah, I love this fucking movie. That's what I'll say up front.
Yeah, and I liked it as well. It's really interesting. I was thinking about this. You and I, we don't really have an opportunity to see one another outside of podcasting, but you and I have watched these last two Mission Impossible movies together in the theater.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic, and I hope we continue to do this. And you're right.
Absolutely.
You would anticipate the value of these films to depreciate at this point, but they really don't. And I think there's a couple of reasons why this movie is really spectacular. And I know one of the things that you wanted to talk about was, why are these movies, why do people care about these movies? Because, John, if we were to assess and analyze the narrative, it's not particularly new or interesting. It basically, yeah. I mean, Mission Impossible at this point, they've created a set of narrative expectations that feel quite similar to, as you said, Fast and the Furious movies, Bond movies. But
yeah.
I want to know what you think about this, because I would argue the reason why these movies continue to be perhaps either so popular or the reason why they continue to fascinate people, it has very little to do with the movie itself, and it has more to do with this paratextual conversation, this larger discursive act around the movie itself, principally, as you said, regarding Tom Cruise and what he is quite frankly prepared to do. And I think this is not just isolated to Tom Cruise and the wild stunts he'll perform, but if you know anything about the production of these movies, they attempt to, at least as I understand it, maintain at least a practical ethos to the production.
Sure, they do.
As I understand it, while, of course, they use special effects,
it's not the kind of thing you would see in a Marvel movie where everyone is just on a cold and really clinical set. They try to actually create those masks, which you would think it would be so much easier just to use a computer to generate those. But no, they make real practical effects and then put people in those masks. They do really interesting filmmaking techniques to show actors wearing those masks in mirrors. So I think, I don't know, that is perhaps what I would want to contend is, I think it's this paratextual conversation. It's really about everything around the movie and maybe not so much the movie itself, even though the movie itself is incredibly good.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think this movie in particular, they knew out the gate, like, let's focus on the stunts. Let's focus on, because, you know, the movie previous to this, Fallout, had some of the stunts in that fucking movie. I think they're better than Dead Reckoning, but Tom Cruise, like, he's an insane human being, is what I'll say. And the shit he does in this, you know, the motorcycle stunt's the one that people sort of talk the most about it, and they filmed a bunch of behind the scenes about it, and he is sort of one of the last true Hollywood stars that will take his life into his own hands to do these huge stunts. No one is doing this anymore. He's all about practicality. Like, I noticed when we watched it, there's towards the third act, I don't want to spoil things, but towards the third act, there's a moment when he has to ride a motorcycle up a mountain. And you would think that they would just, you know, cut to him stopping at various points to talk. But they show him, like, going up the mountain on the motorcycle. At one point, he does, like, a few bunny hops and some jumps. And I thought, no one, like, a younger celebrity probably even wouldn't do that. And Tom Cruise is, you know, pushing 60, and he's out here doing these things. And you're right. I think that is a very important part of why these movies continue to be the way they are. I mean, there are a handful of people left that you would consider classic Hollywood superstars. That's slowly dying, I think. But like him, you know, and your Brad Pitts, your George Clooney's, those guys are still out there doing it. But he is like top dog. I mean, I think Top Gun Maverick sort of proved the point that people want to watch Tom Cruise. And yeah, I think he loves movies. He loves the art of cinema. He loves knowing what will look good on camera. And he wants you to know how much love he's put into this. And I think, yeah, that's really why these movies continue to be as popular as they are.
Yeah, and this is not new, the idea that the narrative around a film is almost more entertaining and engaging than the narrative of the movie itself. But what's fascinating, and I think you're right, they didn't decide to shoot all of this footage just to then house on like a Blu-ray later. I mean, all of this was, it almost feels like they were farming for clicks and clips and everything. Like, let's create, again, this competing narrative about the movie. And when I say competing, I only say that because, again, the narrative about these movies, they almost seem more important. They seem to supersede the narrative about the movie itself. And I just don't know. And I think you're right. There's something about having someone like Tom Cruise, who is, if we wanted to be charitable, maybe a complicated person. He's had a complicated history, as you said, as a celebrity. I think there's a really interesting way of maybe thinking through the way Tom Cruise has constructed his celebrity persona, because it's been a bit messy at times. But you're right, at this point, his celebrity persona, it's, as you said, it seems to be, he's creating a persona where he's almost forcing us to watch him try to take his life. And that's become like, that's become the thing, strangely enough. But I also think it's super interesting how, like, you said this a moment ago, you and I were, when we finished watching the movie, we were talking about how when he arrives in the train, because that whole motorcycle situation off a mountain, he's doing this to get on a train. Yep. He makes a they, like, the filmmakers make a pretty direct reference to, like, a Buster Keaton movie here. And this is something else that I like about Tom Cruise is you can find these lovely little referential moments. And film is really good about doing this, right? I mean, all film, Quentin Tarantino, I think, has spoken about this, the referential nature of film. And I think one of the ways that I always like to think about Tom Cruise in these movies, he's basically trying to do what silent film stars did, but in 21st century action movies. That's maybe the best way to think about Tom Cruise and his ethos. He's just trying to be a silent film star. And I think he's really good at doing it because a lot of his, like I told you, Megan and I watched the first Mission Impossible last week. And she said, there's something about like his movements. Like he's doing, like his movements at times in that movie are so wooden, especially near the beginning, it draws attention to itself. Like he's not attempting to do something akin to like cinematic realism, even in an action film. He's moving his body throughout that movie in ways that you would almost like expect or see from a silent film star. And it's only as you mentioned The General, for example, it's when you said that I thought, oh my God, he's basically become a silent film star, or maybe he's always been a silent film star, at least in these movies. And I think that's a great way to think about him in these movies. He's a silent film star. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I letterboxed an interview with Christopher McQuarrie about like, Christopher McQuarrie is the director of this film, about what movies did you show the cast and crew to like get them, you know, ready for the film. And he said they referenced The General. They're like, all the train stuff has to be as good as The General, which like, if you're talking about action adventure films, it's like The General's number one or two. It's like Raiders of the Lost Ark and The General are always up there. And Buster Keaton did all his own stunts and the train stuff is fucking insane. And, you know, thinking about Tom Cruise as this sort of encapsulation of silent film stars. If you think about the first Mission Impossible, what is the most memorable scene in that movie? Well, it's when he's dropped down from a ceiling. There is no sound whatsoever, and it's like a 10-minute scene of him trying steal a list from something, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. I think he does a lot with his eyes in this. He's still very charming. I think that's the key to Ethan Hunt as a character is he is a very charming individual. The scenes that are comedic feel very good. Like the scene with him and Hayley Atwell when they're in the little Mini Cooper having that chase scene is so full of like this great comedy timing, these little bits that are just really fun to watch, and I think they're put in purposefully for the film. They're not just put in because oh we need a laugh here. They always do service to the story itself, and on top of that, it's also just like now he's getting better at like the emotional side of this character, which we've sort of gotten. But now it's like he's almost become almost a mentor figure in these movies compared to what he was before. And I find it fascinating. I think it's fun to watch.
Yeah. And that really happened in the third film, I suppose, because there are these sizable time jumps between all of these movies. And
for sure.
In the third film, if I recall correctly, he retired from field work and he really became an instructor or something akin to like an IMF professor or something. But you were that whole elongated sequence, the car chase, right? I mean, can you think of anything more axiomatic of an action film than having a car chase? And I think you're absolutely right, because even the way those two actors move their bodies and the way comedy works, he feels a bit like Chaplin at times, the way he's moving his body around and the way they sequence some of those movements. If you watch, for example, old Charlie Chaplin films, some of those action sequences, some of those fight sequences are really interesting because of just how nimble and acrobatic Chaplin is. But part of, just to build on what you said, like Tom Cruise, the work he does in this movie as Ethan Hunt, he's not like, if you watch Pierce Brosnan in those Bond films, there are times when he gets in like sticky situations, but it always feels like he's in control and he's winking at the audience. Yeah. Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt never feels that way. Like there are times when he does this work of communicating just how perilous all of these situations feel to him. And that's something else that I like. The idea of like, the castrated action star, because that's not something that we necessarily got. I mean, if you think about action stars from the 80s, even at times like action stars from the 90s, there was never this sense that they were necessarily lacking figures. But that's exactly who Ethan Hunt is. Even in the first Mission Impossible movie, the way, like, he always looks shocked in ways that I just don't anticipate from action stars.
Sure.
And that's just something Tom Cruise has consistently brought to his performance of this character. The sense that he is a kind of lacking and castrated figure. And I love that so much. Because, again, that's...
Yeah.
That's acknowledging something that is true for all of us. But it's not... laboring under some delusion that there's someone somewhere who is not a lacking figure. And that's often what you get with a lot of action stars, is they are the non-lacking figure, right? But yeah, not Tom Cruise, not Ethan Hunt.
They're all like Neo, basically. And
they're all like Neo, yeah.
Yeah, I think, and it serves, you know, and just to add on to that, I think it really, you have to applaud the filmmaking itself, because that the chase scene, the car chase scene, is shot so perfectly. I mean, and it reminds me a lot of a Jackie Chan movie. Jackie Chan's one of my favorite action stars.
Oh yeah.
Also, straight silent film star. Always on the always like starts below the enemy. Always starts with some kind of handicap. Always. That's how Jackie Chan is. Everything's comedic. Everything has like a fury about it. And here, you know, we get this great shot where Ethan's got his phone. He's like, "I'm getting us a car," and it's like this like really cool, you know, modern thing, and then there's like this great dolly shot over to this like gorgeous Porsche. You're like, oh my god, they're gonna take this Porsche, and then that dolly shot keeps going because the tracker walks in past that car, and the dolly comes over, and it's just like the smallest car you could ever imagine.
Yeah,
and then they get in, and Ethan can't even figure out how to start it, and it's just so good.
I mean, it's so perfect. And
yeah, and like he gets hurt a lot, like the car gets thrown all over the fucking place. And, yeah, it puts, like, a humanistic side to him, which is what people really like about action stars, I think. At least I do. I like when I can that makes you root for them more, I think.
And, again, I think that's part of this larger, like, metatextual conversation this film has. I mean, Tom Cruise as a notoriously small person, right? And even if you think about how the car works in action movies, you were talking about the Fast and the Furious, even in Bond films, right? I mean, the car is basically a signifier for like a raging erect penis. It's just it's just a big, powerful erect penis. And here it's the most like almost flaccid, diminutive penis imaginable. And that's what this movie chooses to do. And it's so wonderful in that way. You know, again, Tom Cruise, his mistakes, misdeeds, and foibles notwithstanding, it's he deliberately puts himself in situations where he gets the small flaccid penis, and he's completely fine with that, and he almost seems to celebrate it in some ways. So it's spectacular.
So wild to say, but you're absolutely correct.
And then
that's
like,
exactly.
Yeah, and then if you think about like some of the hench characters, like the character Paris, who I think she's in one of those Marvel movies, like she's in like the biggest raging cock of a car you can imagine, and just like so enjoying it, right?
Oh yeah, she's a big Hummer, just running over things,
just
and
ramming into everything. So.
Yeah, she is. It's great. I think that my issue, like I was comparing it to when I saw Indiana Jones, and Indiana Jones was also almost 3 hours long, just like this, but they didn't know when to end the action scene. They didn't know when to cut it off. Like, here, we got snippets, like, you know, and I was even talking to you because they take so much time at the beginning. And my favorite thing in Mission Impossible movies is the cold open. I love it more than anything because there's always, like, a great little tiny, like, IMF case they go on that normally doesn't have anything else to do with the rest of the film at the beginning. It's fucking awesome. And so here I kept waiting, and we had this great action set piece. Then we had some quiet dialogue, and then we had this wonderful espionage set piece. And I thought, what the fuck is going on? And then, you know, after 20 minutes, the cold open hits. And I applaud them for being able to wait that long before they even run a credit scene. You know, it's really done so well. And I think watching it on the big screen made me really realize how much I love to see certain movies in that setting. Like some movies you have to see on the biggest, best screen you could. We saw it at a phenomenal screen.
It was
here in town. It was so great. It sounded so good.
Beautiful.
And I highly recommend, if you're a fan of just film in general, filmmaking, you should totally go watch this on a big, big screen if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, and I mentioned this to John, so and part of this is probably like having a child during the pandemic. It's just not conducive to like, hey, let's go watch a movie tonight, people. Okay. We had our second child, Theodore, in 2020. But this is only the second movie I've watched after the pandemic. And the first one was the new Wes Anderson movie. I've watched two movies in the theater this summer, and I told John, for decidedly different reasons, because, you know, a Wes Anderson movie is not a Mission Impossible movie in a variety of different ways. But I had these moments while watching both of them. I had these like revelations that I so thoroughly enjoyed missing these kinds of communal experiences. And this is something that I talk about a lot. And I just, there is something, I mean, both, like, there are so many potential problems with watching movies in theaters. John and I had a series of interesting misadventures with someone who maybe doesn't understand how space and time works, which is fine. But just sharing, like, there was this person beside us. I don't know if you saw this person, John, but anytime Tom Cruise started running, she would do the arms, like the Tom Cruise arms.
That. Yeah,
she was so like she was so into this, like, because it is super silly. Like, this is part of like the theatricality of Tom Cruise, which again reminds me of, and I think harkens back to these silent film stars. Like, she was just doing the arms because it is kind of silly. And Tom Cruise will run approximately 17,000 miles in a single Mission Impossible movie, so you have a lot of opportunities to see it. But just really appreciating that communal experience. And sure, like, the screen was fantastic, the sound was great, but just being in a space with a lot of people and watching, well, sure, a movie intended to make money, but a movie also, I think, intended to satisfy people who really like movies and like movie making and like how tricky it is to make movies. Because this is also, this was a pandemic shoot, right? So, a lot of the, I was reading a bit. I mean, one of the reasons why Macquarie chose to really emulate what you might see in the first Mission Impossible movie was because that allowed them to shoot actors alone and in isolation, which is why there's a lot of close-ups and a lot of Dutch tilting. There were practical reasons to do that, and like, no one would want a pandemic to create restrictions that could then create interesting aesthetic possibilities, but it certainly allowed them to think about, well, how do we want to shoot this? And how can we mitigate against spreading COVID while making a Mission Impossible movie? Well, let's just maybe make an homage, aesthetically speaking, to the first Mission Impossible movie, which is why this movie feels a lot like the first Mission Impossible movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I mean, it was fun to watch it because I noticed all that stuff, and they paid so much homage to it. But I also thought, ain't nobody making a movie like De Palma. That's for damn sure. No, I thought that they're trying. They're really trying, but I don't think they're going to get there. I do love the all the little tiny jokes referencing the first film, referencing the previous movies.
Yeah.
This is a very fun movie. There are moments that are super heavy, though. Sure. That I think might take you out for a second. I think if I had to complain about anything, I think that would be it. But all it's done is made me completely stoked for the next one that comes out next year. I can't fucking wait to see this flick. I just can't wait.
I'm so excited. Yeah, but this is like, Mission Impossible has created its own like discursive expectations. You know, there's always probably a sequence at a party, right? There's always a sequence at a party somewhere. I promise, think back to all these movies. There's a party somewhere, and they're doing like espionage stuff. There's always a rogue agent. Like, someone somewhere will turn coat. Usually, like, there's usually like an important character to Ethan Hunt who dies at some point, which maybe this is one of the more regressive elements of these movies, because it's usually like a beautiful woman who needs to die, right?
Sure.
And also boy, oh boy, can we talk about the Christian iconography?
Oh, what? What are you talking? I don't know if I know this. What are you talking about?
The keys make a cross.
Okay, so
really, it's a cross, John. It's
no, I know. I don't want to give away what the keys do, though.
Well, I'm not. I just.
They have to. Keys. There's a key that makes a cross. I understand. I get your point. Yes, yeah. I understand it. I was thinking more along the lines of like they shot like halo light around Ethan Hunt at some points, and I just didn't realize it.
Oh well, I mean,
but it wouldn't surprise me if they did do that.
We can talk about the entity, and it's like halo. Visual presentation, right? Yeah.
So. Biggest fucking MacGuffin. I love that it's too. Awesome. That the whole plot was just a MacGuffin.
It's amazing.
The dumbest. The narrative. So by the narrative was so dumb. I thought I don't care about any of this, but it's acted so well.
Yeah.
That I'm so into it.
Yeah.
But there's, the more they talked about it, the sillier it got, and I thought, so I know it doesn't matter.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. It's so silly. It's an AI, much like maybe your Skynets and your Terminators. That becomes self-aware and self-conscious and renames itself Joe McGuffsky because that's all they're after. It's just no, you're right. Like, this reminded me of the Community episode with the MacGuffin Institute. Like, how did they not just call it a MacGuffin? That would have been perfect.
Yeah, I watched Ronin yesterday for like the 75th time in my life. Have you ever seen this movie with Robert De Niro?
No, I don't think I have. I was thinking of something
Robert
else.
Robert De Niro and directed by John Frankenheimer, and David Mamet wrote the screenplay.
Maybe I have
and
seen this movie.
Yeah. The whole movie is just this heist of them trying to get a case, and De Niro's character asks approximately 75 times what's in the case.
Yeah.
And he's never told. And I wanted to be like, the case is a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
The case has just got MacGuffins in it. That's all you need to know. What's and that's what case? I thought with the, they said the entity. What's the entity? The entity, the entity. And
the entity. It
got so silly at one point, it knows what you're thinking before you do. And I wanted to think, that's impossible. That's literally an impossibility, but we'll roll with it.
Yeah, no, it's this, it's almost like the entity is what Netflix wants their algorithm to be, which is like, we can predict what you want to watch next. Like, can I listen? I have an email sitting in my inbox right now from Netflix that says, "Hey, Colin, what about finishing Community?" Like, I promise I'll get there, AI. Like, clearly you don't listen to the podcast.
At some
which
point,
is fine. Yeah.
We will be there, you stupid old bitch. Not even listen to our podcast.
Doesn't
how
even
rude.
Listen to, I mean, the Netflix algorithm doesn't even subscribe to the pod, which is frustrating. So, yeah. No, it's like what's in the briefcase? Narrative propulsion. It's just a sheet of paper that says narrative propulsion. No, it's fine. I mean, the entity, I cannot think of language more in depth, like that feels like something you write in a script when you want to think of something better later, and they just
right. It's a filler word. They forgot to change it. Yeah,
the entity. Sure.
The entity. It's silly. I do love that the whole mission was just to get a key. I thought that was great. I don't really give a shit where it goes from
two
that
keys.
Point.
Yeah,
they had to get two keys. That was the whole movie's just we have to get two keys. We don't have to turn the keys. We don't know where the keys go. We just have
We're
to
just
get
trying to
keys.
Get them. Yeah. Yeah. We just need to so have these good. Two keys. Yeah, that's all it is. It's just we need to have these two keys. And I told you, like, the opening sequence is really similar to the opening of GoldenEye, which is
yes,
also
yes, you did, which
fantastic.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah.
Totally. Like, the entity feels a lot like GoldenEye as well, but just in a more, like, algorithmic driven environment. So yeah,
GoldenEye was just like a satellite network, right?
It was a satellite that like shot like rockets or something. it was like maybe an EMP or something. Like it did something with electricity, because I'm trying to think of like, what did the Sean Bean character want to do? He wanted to erase everyone's debt.
Wait, yeah. Did he really?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Oh,
like,
fuck Bond then for killing him. That's
fucked
no, up.
No, I mean, yeah, 00006 was based as shit. So it's, but yeah, he's the villain in that movie. So yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah, he gets shot and falls off the satellite dish, man.
He falls off and then the satellite dish falls on him. So
What a bummer. Now I'm sad about Trevelyan. Sean Bean needs to show up in one of these Mission Impossible movies. I mean, he'll eat it big time because that's sort of his MO. But I'd love for him to just pop up.
I mean, there's no fewer than like 7 Game of Thrones cast members in this movie, so.
Are there really?
Eh, that's an exaggeration. There's at least 3, though.
Who?
I think there's 2 in that sequence early in the movie when we realize Ethan is the, that sequence early in the movie. It's like an AI wrote that. When Ethan and Katrice have
in the room with the higher ups. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like at least 2 of them are Game of Thrones characters. And there was a 3rd one, but I don't remember. I think there's at least
Colin's blowing smoke. I don't remember any Game of Thrones characters.
I go back and watch it, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Except Peter Dinklage is in it. He is the entity. And he's just phoning in every hello, I am the entity.
I don't, I mean, I guess that's a Peter Dinklage impression. Yeah, I don't know if anyone has a Peter Dinklage. It's
Peter Dinklage rules.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah, Station Agent, I talk about that movie a lot. Stunning movie.
Well, this also is a stunning movie. I hope that all you fine patrons go watch it. Let us know what you think. Again, if you don't know, I'm on Threads now. You can find me there. Colin will put my link in the show notes to get to me. Just send me a friend request and I'll approve it. Yeah. And I'm off Twitter. I can't handle that old piss boy Elon Musk anymore. So
yeah,
I've said goodbye to it.
There's very little of interest happening on Twitter these days. I might do the same. I think I'll keep the podcast Twitter account, but
yeah. It's getting pretty rough that way. So anyway, Mission Impossible's a good time. I highly recommend it. If you haven't, just watch all of them. Mission Impossible 2, you can skip that one.
Oh, I totally disagree. That one. No, it's
no.
Come on, John. No.
Listen to me.
Listen, even your least accomplished child is still a child you love. So, no.
I don't remember anything that happens in that movie apart from the opening and the motorcycle jump. I remember nothing else in that movie.
John, it's a crazy movie. I mean, it's like the most gunplay, if I remember correctly, is in that movie.
Well, it's John Woo. That's understandable,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are there big heisty scenes in that movie like the other ones?
Yeah, there's a couple. Like one of the big set pieces, because it's instead of like the knock list or instead of a weapon, it's basically a bioweapon movie, which I think they've done a couple of times,
okay.
Right? Where the MacGuffin is a bioweapon. Chimera, I think, is the name of it. So it's
vaguely remember this.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a bioweapon. And there's a set piece where Ethan Hunt, he's destroying all of these like Chimera vials, but one remains, and like Tandy Newton's in it, and she injects herself. And then he like jumps out of the building, right? Actually feels reminiscent of the Daniel Day-Lewis vehicle, The Last of the Mohicans, when he's like, "I'll find you, I'll come back for you," and then he jumps out the window. So,
I was literally thinking of Daniel Craig when you said that, and I was like, I don't remember him doing that. That'd be wild.
It's Daniel Day-Lewis. So,
all right, that's Mission Impossible.
Mission
it's great. Colin, do you have anything else you want to say about this wonderful movie?
No, I love this movie.
Same.
Love it. Love it. Love it so much. 1,000 times. 3,000. Love you. I love you 3,000. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. So.
What a title. All right. Thank you so much for being patrons. We truly appreciate you. And until next time, for the Hop On's podcast, my name is John Phelps.
My name is Colin Cox.
This podcast will self-destruct in 5 seconds. What if Kittredge talk like that? Ha, ha, ha.